delighted to welcome listeners to another episode of Evidence into Action, the Education Endowment Foundation's podcast, where we explore all the most important topics of the day when it comes to education, and we listen to national and international experts, and also experts in the field in terms of school leaders and teachers and practitioners who are doing brilliant work tackling some of these challenges, engaging with evidence, and so much more. Quick run through of the episode. So we're going to focus on the topic of attendance. It's both a national issue. It's got local challenges. There's interesting emerging new evidence all the time. And then there's school leaders and setting leaders grappling with this. So we're going to get underneath some of those challenges and explore the evidence. Our first interviewee is going to be Owen Carter from Impact Ed. Then we'll speak to Jane Ellsworth from Huntington School in York. And we'll speak to Oliver Kerr, who's at Old Moat Primary in Manchester. And my co-host is my EEF colleague. It's Freya Morrissey. Freya, can you please introduce yourself to our listeners? They might, if they know the podcast, have heard you before.
Thanks, Alex. It's a pleasure to be here. So I'm Freya Morrissey. I'm currently a content specialist for the Education Endowment Foundation, and I'm a secondary teacher and subject leader based in Devon. And one of the areas that lots of us in schools are focusing on at the moment is how to tackle increased pupil absence, particularly sort of post-pandemic, and increasing attendance and engagement in school. We know that students experiencing disadvantage are on average more likely to be absent from school. So we need to address this really well if we're going to support all pupils to achieve the best possible outcomes, both personally and academically. And at the EEF, as you know, we're doing some work on the evidence base that might support effective approaches to attendance. I can't wait to hear the insights and experiences of our guests today.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And without further ado, then, we'll introduce our first guest, which is Owen Carter from Impact Ed. Owen, could you talk a little bit about yourself, your background, and relationship with this topic of attendance, which is so live right now?
Yeah, so thanks for having me on. I'm Owen Carter. I'm director and co-founder of Impact Ed Group. We work with schools, education and social purpose organisations to help them make better quality decisions using good evidence. And my own background is a bit of a mix between research and evidence and working in and with schools. So prior to setting up the organisation, I worked with the education charity, the Brilliant Club, helping them evaluate the impact of their university access work. And then before that, in teaching professional development. And one of the areas that we are obsessed with at Empire Z Group at the moment is around attendance. And really for two reasons. One is to do with actually feedback from our partner schools, which is that attendance is proving such a knotty issue, and many of the things that they were doing pre the pandemic just aren't quite having the same impact that they did previously. And the second is because of the pretty large evidence base about the link of attendance to academic achievement and a whole range of other outcomes that we might want for young people. So last year we launched the Understanding Attendance Project, which aims to help schools and trusts to unpack the drivers of pupil absence in their setting, develop a better understanding of what they can do about it, and as well as helping schools and trusts individually from that, then generating a high quality national data set around some of the drivers around pupil absence and therefore what we can do about it. So that's hopefully collate some of the lessons that we can bring to bear as a result.
It was great to read that Understanding Attendance report from Impact Ed in January. Could you talk us through the key findings of that? There were sort of four key findings. It'd be great to hear you on those.
Yeah, of course. So the kind of key findings that we emphasised in the report, we bring together a range of survey data that we collect directly from young people, over 30,000 young people, and then also data on young people's attendance as well, which is collected through our school impact platform, which integrates with school information systems and makes it easy for school leaders to analyze the data in their setting. What that means is that we're able to look at the links between specific drivers, self-reported by young people, and then how that relates to the actual attendance at school. So what that tells us, four key things. The first is around sense of belonging being a crucial driver of attendance across all contexts. Of course, all the factors that we are measuring, things like well-being, anxiety, engagement with lessons, we find that sense of belonging is most consistently correlated with a child's likelihood of attending school. And there's evidence suggests that it's particularly important for females and is closely linked with feeling safe at school. The second key finding that we emphasize is around an emerging challenge of a second transition from year 7 to year 8. I think we're all quite accustomed to looking at the primary to secondary transition and some of the challenges that that can present. But actually, the greatest drop-off in attendance in our national data set was seen in year 7 to year 8, more than any other year group. And that transition challenge is particularly pronounced for disadvantaged pupils and pupils with special educational needs. The third area is around the intersectionality of attendance drivers. Well, we know, for example, that disadvantaged pupils are less likely to attend, but it's actually sometimes when those different factors intersect. So female pupils who are eligible for pupil premium and have a special educational need, for example, are much more likely to be low attending. In our data set, the attendance rate of that group was 77%. And then finally, we emphasize that the awareness of sanctions and consequences, while important, isn't as strongly linked to improved attendance as other factors. Again, our data tends to suggest that actually understanding the importance of school, the quality of relationships and peers with teachers, are much more strongly associated with attendance than policies that focus on sanctions or punishments.
Thanks, Erin. I want to dig a little bit more into that first finding that you talked about, how the sense of belonging at school is absolutely critical to being a sort of driver of attendance. I wonder if you could say a little bit more about that. You mentioned, for example, particular groups in there. Could you talk us through some of those findings in a bit more detail and how the identification of those groups came about?
Yes, of course. So the we're specifically looking at people's sense of school membership. So that's an academically validated questionnaire tool that is included within our platform, and that asks children a variety of questions around feeling part of the school community, feeling respected, and so on and so forth. What we found is that pupils in the top 20% of school attendance scored 10 percentage points higher on that belonging scale than those in the lowest 20% of attendance. So we see quite a disparity between high attenders and low attenders in terms of them feeling a sense of belonging. Interestingly, that's quite strongly related with feeling of respect. So that top 20% of attenders being more likely, 13% higher to report that the teachers respect them. And then that group were also 11% higher in terms of saying that they thought missing schools too much could affect their grades. So there's something fundamentally important about people's understanding why education matters, feeling part of something that is greater than themselves. In terms of the specific groups, then we also link those responses with demographic characteristics of young people. We found that on the whole, girls scored lower than boys in that sense of belonging measure. And actually, sense of belonging was more closely correlated with attendance for females than for males as well. They were more likely to miss school if they didn't feel part of the school community. Females were also less likely to feel safe in school, 3% less safe during lessons and break, 5% less safe on the journey to and from school as well. So I think that the really important piece for us then is around how we can think really deliberately about how we create a sense of belonging and kind of membership at all levels of school. But actually for females in particular, some evidence suggests that actually things about feeling safe physically, emotionally, and otherwise in the school environment is particularly important.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think there's a connection there, isn't it, around sort of wider work with how girls feel in school and some of the sort of behavior between boys and girls sometimes in school. And, you know, we know a year or so ago, Ofsted was doing some of that work on sort of peer-on-peer abuse and making that sort of highlighting that more. So that's really interesting. With the second finding, then, that challenge of a second transition from year 7 into year 8, it's really interesting raising that. And I wondered to what extent that second transition might actually be the result of an unsuccessful first transition between primary and secondary, and wondered whether there was anything more that you could say around that.
Yeah, I think it's this kind of transition issue is such a key one. What we see in our data is that attendance actually during early year seven is reasonably strong compared to secondary schools, other year groups, but then tends to decline a little bit over the course of year seven, and then, as I say, more pronounced on the move into year eight. Again, sort of the to put that in context, we saw that the overall attendance rate for pupils in year seven in our sample was 94%, and that was compared to 92% in year eight. And again, particularly pronounced for some of those subgroups. For people premium pupils with SEND, attendance rates fell to 83% in year eight compared to 89% in year seven. I think, obviously the drivers of that are likely to be quite complex and quite nuanced. So, we don't want to overclaim on it. But what some of the feedback from our partner schools on that data suggest is, as you say, that there is sometimes a delayed effect almost, perhaps in terms of transitioning into the secondary school environment. So perhaps children that don't form social connections as readily, that then starts to become more pronounced as perhaps social groups become more settled and entrenched over the course of year seven. And that starts to really play through into absence in year eight. The other thing that I think is worth emphasizing as well in all this is again around actually that kind of year eight dip being something that schools have reported more widely that we work with as well. And so I think there is something around, given that a lot of emphasis on transition tends to focus, as you would expect, on young people, shortly after they enter secondary school, there might be more that we could do as a system to think about what does that look like in term two, term three, and then into year eight as well, because there certainly does appear to be something going on there.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I think with really interesting new data, sometimes it raises questions, doesn't it? And surprise areas. So perhaps this is in terms of where schools normally allocate their energies in terms of year seven transition, kind of GCSEs, SATs groups, some of these realities that we know schools prioritize challenging points, particularly academic challenging points, that this kind of year eight question is an interesting new one, and schools should consider that. Just on that point of, we talked about the potential of kind of attendance drivers being intersectional, and it might be disadvantage co-occurring with some other issues. How do you help schools also recognize this national picture and these things that might offer really good questions, but then also really scrutinize their own circumstances and really, get to grips with their own data and try and understand that problem?
I think it's important to emphasize that a crucial way of the which in which we've designed the Understanding Attendance Project is designed to equip schools to look at those drivers in their setting. So while clearly we can point to some national trends that emerge from the data, one of the things that our data also tells us is that the drivers of attendance vary very strongly from setting to setting. While demographic groupings, for example, definitely capture some of the sort of risk factors associated with attendance, again, a lot varies by the individual. So for us, because the project is powered through our digital platform, we've then been able to provide all schools that are participating in the project with personalized analysis around which factors are most closely correlated with attendance in their setting, and which groups they might want to consider zooming in more detail. So I think ultimately, whether participating in our project or schools understanding that analysis independently, I think there is no substitute for looking really deeply at the drivers of attendance. And I think that would definitely be a key message that I'd want to give, is getting beneath the surface of the data, because actually, as you probe more into it, you do quickly realize how complex attendance is, and trying to develop that really nuanced and local understanding of attendance, I think, is absolutely key.
And for me, one of my reading, and just sense check this out, is that there was actually a real positive framing and about the focus on belonging, on peer leadership. These are all really constructive. And it's not necessarily we're thinking about attendance from through the lens of, a refusal or a negativity. It's often about really positive, constructive things we can do to build that community and really practical steps we can take.
Yes, I would agree with that. And we see again and again in our data that it's those schools that have built that sense of belonging, built that sense of kind of shared purpose that also tend to have higher attendance. So for example, one of our partner primary schools summarized their approach as kind of creating a positive buzz around attendance. So small wins section in regular meetings, celebrating pupils who'd gone from inconsistent to more consistent attenders, developing attendance ambassadors, so pupils who improved attendance over time. And I think a really key feature of the approaches that they put in place are around it, sort of attendance trajectory. So not just celebrating those who are already attending school very consistently and, 100% attendance awards and some of those things that we know are quite, can be quite problematic, but actually really celebrating kind of positive improvements in trajectory. I think that's also actually really important from a staff morale perspective in schools as well, because there are very few schools that are not struggling with attendance challenges in one way or another. And it is a labor intensive and resource intensive issue to address. So actually making sure that you're creating a community and a culture that does celebrate those successes, celebrates those small wins, and positively frames attendance, I think is really crucial, both for pupils, but actually also for adults in our schools as well.
It's really helpful. I think what you've helped me do there, Owen, is crystallize belonging in more concrete terms. I've not always kind of fully understood it, but I think that's really helped me in real practical examples there too. I want to end with a short practical question. It might be a bit tricky, but what one strategy, and I know that's being a bit reductive, but what one strategy would you want policy or school leaders to consider approaching this challenge of improving school attendance? Is there one area, one reflection, one strategy that just comes to mind for you?
I think what jumps out really strongly from our data and our work is that piece around the drivers of attendance varying from setting to setting and school to school. So I think in terms of policy change, things that can empower area-based groups and school leaders to really take those personalized approaches to addressing attendance is likely to be the key. So it may not be one big thing, it may be lots of little things, but I think from a kind of policy perspective, empowering place-based change, leveraging things like the priority education investment areas, the attendance hubs, really making sure that those groups and other community groups and school groups that exist are empowered and given the, frankly, funding and capacity that they might need to be able to do that diagnosis really well. Because actually, what our data very clearly shows is if you don't get the diagnosis and the understanding of the challenge right in the first place, it's very hard to get the intervention right and very hard to find the right strategy that will make a difference. So I think support from government, other stakeholders, and whoever might be, involved in addressing attendance, that's the sort of area that I would be considering, in terms of how we can empower those on the ground to develop that understanding and make those decisions.
That was a really great final response, Owen, because actually what you've done is you've characterized the requires a national support structure here. Schools and settings can't do it on their own. They do amazing work, but there's factors outside that can be supportive and can help them do their work best. So I think that's really helpful. Another aspect that's helping them do their work best is engaging in this type of insight from the understanding attendance report. And can I just go back to you, Owen? Is there a ways people can be involved in the project if they want to?
Yes, absolutely. So we're continuing to run the project and recruiting schools on an ongoing basis. We've over 200 schools in the project already and want to make sure we've got as wide and representative a group of schools involved across the project the country as possible. If colleagues are interested in getting in touch or participating in the project and accessing some of that drivers of attendance in their own setting, then do go to impacted.org.uk, follow the links there. And ultimately, the more schools that we have participating in the project, the more powerful the data will be. So I very much hope people will be interested in getting involved.
Brilliant, Owen. I'm sure they will. And just thank you for all this work. And also thank you for your time on this podcast. It's been very much appreciated.
Thank you.
So our second guest is Jane Ellsworth, who's a school leader up in North Yorkshire. Jane, can you introduce yourself for us, please?
Hi, so I'm Jen Ellsworth. I'm deputy head teacher at Huntington School, but also director of Huntington Research School.
Can you tell us a little bit about the attendance challenges that you have in your context?
So here at Huntington, attendance is certainly recovering. We're certainly starting to see things ever so slightly improving. But since the pandemic, we are still, on average, for our general school population, a good few percentage points down from where we would like to be. The biggest challenge for us, though, is the attendance of our disadvantaged cohort. So that has got quite a significant gap, particularly also for our girls. So it's ever so slightly higher for the girls in our cohort and also some of our girls with SEND. So a number of different groups within that wider disadvantaged cohort have are certainly flagging in the data for us as quite a major worry.
So how do you go about diagnosing those needs of your pupils and families to support them with attendance? I mean, you mentioned a few groups there, but can you tell us a little bit more about the processes that you go through in a bit more detail?
So the data is utterly crucial, and having the right data in front of you to be able to start to see that. I think the one thing I've learned this year with attendance, which is always very interesting, is this idea of this cumulative factor. So you get to the start of the year, and if somebody has a holiday, for example, in the first week, it can look like their attendance is utterly appalling, and it can take all term, for example, for that percentage, as we might look at it, to change. So somebody has really, really strategically got to have hold of the data. They've got to have a really, really good understanding of what attendance data is telling us. I think it can't be something that is left with just one person or a very, very small team. I think particularly here, we're a very, large secondary school, 1500 students, to actually have a handle on the attendance of all of those of those children. I just feel that it's something has to be, you have to find a way to manage that on a smaller scale. It's really important, I think, that we start to see trends and we start to see patterns emerging and we start to see upwards and downward trends. But actually getting the data to work for you to show you your upward and downward trends, and then having the knowledge, for example, that it was one holiday, and yeah, we might still want to tackle that one holiday in term time, absolutely. But if it's one holiday, but the rest of the time their attendance is really, really pretty good, that is a very, very different conversation that somebody perhaps who's steadily having one morning or one day off every fortnight, and it's just kind of that's really, really notching off. So for me, the data is absolutely crucial in terms of where you start. Having a handle on that, having someone that can manipulate the data to give you that level of reporting, to give you some of those flags over time. But you've also got to have the human side of that. So you cannot do that without having the pastoral team, your form tutors, your support workers who know the children best, putting the context on, trying to bring that data with that human side together in a school. Is just hugely challenging. But that is very much where I would have our starting point.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Jane. It's really interesting to hear you saying about, getting the data to work for you, and that actually some of that is quite granular in terms of your systems, I imagine. And also sort of having that human element brought in as well, because it's obviously not all about the attendance percentages, but also the humans that lie behind that. On that subject then of the humans, in the Education Endowment Foundation's guidance report on working with parents, there's some interesting ideas about the importance of well-designed communication with families. Could you tell us about how you've explored and developed that in your context?
Yeah, so I first became aware of some of the research behind this from some of the work that Stephen Tierney led in Blackpool, and that was a number of years ago, kind of pre-pandemic, really now, when it really highlighted for me just how and we all love a quick win, don't we, in education, and we know that a lot of things are not quick wins, and so looking at and tweaking parent comms just spoke to me quite quickly because it feels like something that's quite achievable, it's quite doable, and the evidence showed that it did potentially change mindsets, some of that kind of nudge theory around parents' beliefs. So that was very much a starting point for us. What we did realize, we did a review of our communications, and just some brilliant nuggets there around percentages. If we all got 92% on a test, we'd be absolutely thrilled. If you got 92% on that quiz that you do at the weekend, you'd be absolutely delighted. Therefore, sending a letter home to parents to say that you're a bit worried because their child's attendance percentage has got to 92, that understandably, when you actually stand back and somebody points that out to you go, oh yeah, I can understand why parents might not think that is actually very much of a challenge. And so some of that felt like they were really some of the things that we could change quite quickly. So reviewing and thinking around our parent comms. Now, you've also, again, I've talked about already this human side of attendance. Percentages as well, depending on what time of the year it is, depending on the situation, only tell a real headline figure. And what I think we've happened has happened up till now is we've had these kind of almost, I would call them false thresholds. So severe absence and persistent absence at 90 and 50%, for example, are some of the metrics that are used to measure this. So when our attendance team was first kind of getting up and running with this, they set two flags at 90 and 50 because that's what national data was driving, for example. And they would get alerts when attendance dropped to those levels. And that I think we've moved so far from that being such a just an early flag that it was around wanting to communicate to parents that when things get to 90, we're already kind of missing severe amounts of school that's going to significantly impact on learning. So around communications, either I think you've got to design your parent communications so that parents understand what a good percentage is and where it starts to become a worry for school. We need earlier flags to parents. I think when you get to some of those lower levels, parents are like, well, why didn't you tell me this beforehand? So it's about looking at that. And so what we've done as a school is we've just reviewed quite a lot of the parent comms. MIS systems, text messaging services using alerts offer great workload advantages for school, but they're also quite binary. And again, it's that human side of things. Before any alert goes out, for example, now we run it past a year group team, or we run it past somebody that knows the child, because we know full well that different situations warrant very different approaches. And trying to kind of take parents with us on this journey is crucially important. What we've done this year, though, is we know there's some promise for hit this, but we have wanted to trial this on our in our own context. So there is a great little trial being run from the Behavioural Insights team, and we've actually tried to mirror that trial with our own Year 10 cohort. So with current Year 10, our form groups are roughly kind of balanced in terms of attainment on their starting points in school. So we've taken one half of the year, quite rudimentary split. It's not perfect control group, but to be a control group, and the other half to be an intervention group. And what we've trialed, and we've just started this last half term, is at the end of the half term, sending messages to parents where attendance has fallen below 95% for that previous term, explaining about 95 not being great, what actual number of sessions and number of lessons that means they've missed as opposed to overall percentage. And then hoping that that helps them. We've already had a number of parents come back to us with surprise that their child had missed that many, which I think is what has been found sometimes in the research evidence before. Whether we're in the midst of that trial at the moment, whether we're going to actually see enough difference just from subtle messaging, it'll be interesting to see. But we've actually set that up. We didn't want to completely roll out this text messaging en masse because also, again, as I alluded to, there needs to be a hugely human side to this. And there's sometimes automatic messaging and this kind of thing alone is, or sometimes may even disrupt your parental school relationship rather than you hoping it's going to improve that, and you're going to work together to improve attendance.
I'm really curious, how are you going to decide whether the trial has been effective with that intervention side of the year group? Is it just going to be on the headline figures of whether or not it's affected those students' attendance, or are you using other measures as well?
Yeah, so obviously one of the key measures for us is to use the attendance data from the two half year groups, knowing that there is a little bit of a limitation to that, but it's going to give us a decent enough sample. The other thing we did was we sent a survey home to parents. So parents were sent a survey before the trial started, asking them various questions about, for example, what percentage they felt was a good attendance. Did they understand what about percentages? And a number of other questions about being aware. So we have class charts, for example, as our main method of communication home for rewards. We have all of the children's attendance on class charts, but it was also to ask them about whether they actually ever moved across to that last bit because it's right off the screen. And I know as a parent myself, I don't generally for my own children. So even the tools that we do have, were they working? Were they aware of their child's attendance? Could they tell us what their current attendance percentage was, what that meant? And the idea is that we will resurvey, obviously at the end of the trial to see whether the control group that has been getting these half-termly messages have changed their stance at all on understanding what we might mean as a school by good communicate by good attendance. And also whether the intervention, the control group have perhaps not shifted quite so much their mindset there. So this combination of the overarching data, but also understanding parent and carer kind of mindsets and opinions around attendance.
That's brought us very neatly back around to the headline data plus the human, hasn't it?
I love that. I love that innovation and that kind of monitoring that you're doing. That's really great to hear. I think a real theme coming through is this kind of human element, and you have to have the data. It needs to be well organized and marshaled, but then you have to understand the realities of individuals and families. I think one area that's repeatedly deemed as like promising is creating a culture of belonging within a school or a group of schools. But also there's a bit of a danger of that being a bit fuzzy. I wonder if you could kind of unpick that from your perspective, Jane, and kind of how that might be enacted, a culture of belonging.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. I've been reading a lot about this myself over the last couple of months. And like you say, there's an increasing kind of body of work coming out with this idea of sense of belonging and children want feeling welcome, feeling safe, feeling like they're in an environment where they want to be as being kind of quite a key driver. And again, particularly with girls, where we're seeing that's particularly important to them. I think it's really, really interesting to we're starting to unpick this. There's a couple of things we had already picked up on here as a school that we felt we'd lost a little bit since the pandemic, and quite a bit. There's two key elements to that, really. One is student impact. So that combination of student voice and student leadership opportunities. So really, we've done a lot of work as a senior team in trying to really up our student voice work and also create a really strategic way for lots of leadership opportunities throughout the school, so that students feel they've got a voice, they've got a mechanism by which to have a voice through, and they can have a real say in how things happen at school. The other side of that is also to really boost our extracurricular offer. That kind of, I think we've always been a school that has very much, like most schools, celebrated that the wider achievements. So we celebrate academic, absolutely, but we celebrate wider achievements as well. But I don't think we always created opportunities in our own school. And I also don't think we consulted parents and children enough about those. We put on what staff specialisms were or what staff could offer in their very busy lives, or we put on what we thought they could do with. And so we've done a huge piece of work in the summer, where we consulted with parents, with the students themselves, with other staff members. And I do remember, really interestingly, somebody going, you know, the way we are in teaching at the moment, there's no way you'll just get staff to volunteer to do these clubs. Well, we now have over 60 different clubs running since last summer. And it's really interesting, though. It's that was obviously the first stage of that. But now monitoring the attendance, monitoring who actually goes, who actually gets involved with those. But the staff and students have both felt, I think, such a sense of belonging from going to those. We've developed a number of clubs based purely on what the students wanted. We've been able to offer those. And I think there is certainly some level of buy-in and accessibility there. What we have noticed is at the moment, quite a lot of our clubs are well represented by our most disadvantaged students and by our cohort for SEND, for example. And so that does feel like it's very positive, but there are some clubs that are absolutely not at all. What we are doing at the moment is we've managed to find a way, and again, this goes back to data and workload and ease, to monitor the attendance at all of these clubs and events. And particularly with year 7 and 8, as they enter our school, actually then going and getting form teachers to having personal conversations, trying to get every student to commit to try at least one club. But particularly, we've started with our most disadvantaged and more marginalised students to try to get them to have that connection and that sense of self. Something else we have trialled is we've been looking at the evidence around mentoring. And we've set up a small program, and it is aimed at year 11 because it's, as ever, we'd love to intervene very early in everything, but we felt there was a bit of a need in year 11 to look at our most vulnerable students in year 11 and just give them a little extra layer of SLT mentoring. Again, that sense of somebody noticing them, bit of a sense of belonging. And that's something that, again, we're trialing this year. We're going to get student feedback and parent feedback about that. As well as our own SLT feedback around what is happening there. So it certainly felt like we have to work so much harder to get that sense of belonging in school than perhaps I felt we did before. That's very anecdotal, but it feels like we're having to work much harder to get students that sense that school's a place where they want to be.
That really interesting reflections. I think that intentional approach, it means that something that could be fuzzy becomes really practical, and it feels like you've taken real clear steps with that. And I think that'll be really kind of well understood by colleagues in the wider system who might have a different school context, but and belonging might feel slightly different, but there are some real clear points here about that individual connection in school, about kind of extracurricular and the richness and the sense of belonging. It was really interesting that point you made about teachers as well, and kind of that sense of connection they can gain from that. Sometimes we try not to do things to kind of, just preserve that precious workload, but actually sometimes some things are worth doing and give you much more. I mean, probably teaching is a job that kind of is one of those factors. Earlier on, you mentioned we love quick wins, and we do, and that's why we're going to end with a question which is about a quick win. But it might be you might actually just restate one of the things that you've already been working on as a school. But what one strategy would you advise school leaders to consider approaching this challenge of trying to improve attendance?
I don't know whether you'd call it a strategy as such, but I think the one thing is it has to be a strategy. So I think you've just sort of alluded to it. I've been thinking about this a lot in the last couple of days, and it cannot just be the, well, we'd love to have a few more clubs, or let's get a few different trips, or let's make sure that we offer it and we try to make it accessible to everybody. It's not enough. You've got to be really strategic about it. Certainly in we're evaluating a citywide kind of attendance project in York, and just looking at the evaluation of that, where we've seen the biggest gains in attendance, with particularly some kind of more stuck cases, it's been very much that there's been strategic buy-in at the schools that we've seen, that there has been somebody who has been really leading this, really being able to stand back and have a clear strategy for developing this.
That's a great final point to end on, Jane. So essentially, we have to have a strategy and we have to align and carefully monitor the practical approaches, some of which you've suggested brilliantly practical. And I think that'll be really useful for a wider span of listeners who are both working in schools, working to support schools. And those are the colleagues who work a bit beyond the schools as well. So it was brilliant to hear both your deep reflections, the intentional work you're doing as a school, and also that wider work as well. So big thank you for your time, Jane.
Thank you.
I'm delighted to introduce our third guest. It's Oliver Kerr, who's head teacher, Old Moat Primary School over in Manchester. And Oliver, can you talk a bit more about yourself and particularly about this area of attendance and your background in relation to this area of school improvement and this current challenge?
Hi Alex, thanks for having me on the pod. Yeah, as you said, my name's Oliver Kerr. I'm head teacher at Old Moat Primary in Manchester. We're a two-form entry school. We're about 3 miles out of Manchester city centre. We've got 62% of our children qualify for pupil premium funding. About 9% of the school roll have got EHCPs. 70% of the pupils speak English as an additional language. And also, really importantly, about 25% of our kids started at our school after their reception year. So we have a lot of transients in school.
That's interesting in terms of that context. So just to pick up on that last point, does that change the dynamic in some ways in terms of some of the routine things you can do? How do you go about just dealing with that kind of the new starters and the kind of and that complexity?
So I think we have to have really rigorous admission procedures and make sure that we supportively share what our expectations around attendance are. And I think if we can get families off on the right footing, that's really supportive. But ultimately, being able to communicate really clearly why attendance is important and how it will benefit your child is what we try to do. And I guess it's a universal language. It doesn't matter where you're from and what the circumstances are. Parents all want the children to do well, right?
And we'll probably come back to that point about communication with parents and families because it's so crucial. Of course, we're talking about this podcast about attendance right now because we know it's a salient issue. I mean, the national figures from the Department for Education are quite stark about persistent absence and about specific groups who may have more common absence than others and all of those realities. Can you talk about your school context then and probably build on what you've said already around what challenges you're seeing right now and how you're diagnosing some of those challenges as well and some of the needs and support factors?
So I think it'd be fair to say that the pandemic has had a significant impact on school attendance, and I'm sure colleagues will all be familiar with that theme. It's definitely
Of course.
exacerbated some issues that were there and then brought some new things to the surface. I guess it's important to recognise there will always be a number of families who have issues with concerning rates of attendance. And while the pandemic has maybe worsen some of those situations, we're always going to have to support a number of those families. So this is not a context specific situation. I think it's really important not to get driven away from that. In my school, I'm pleased to report that our attendance data is holding pretty strong, but I know that across Manchester and indeed nationally, that's not always the case and the lived experience for everybody. So yeah, we've seen this real spike in overall absence. We've seen this spike in persistent absence as well. I think the biggest thing is making sure that all stakeholders, but particularly in that parents and carers, really understand the significance of attendance. And I often start conversations with parents talking about a percentage you might get in a driving test or a GCSE, and how hearing something like 90%, for example, would sound really strong. But actually, in the language of attendance, 90% is actually a real concern. And we all know as school professionals that that would just under that would make you what's classed as persistently absent. So language and communication around attendance is really, really important. And whether it's COVID or kind of peace times, if you want, those messages are all the same. And it's about being clear and consistent. I think something that schools particularly have to grapple with at the moment is all of the challenges that they have, and whether attendance is really sitting centrally as one of those major themes. And I think there's real ripple effects from poor attendance. We know that it can impact attainment, and there's lots of research about that. But we also know about that sense of belonging and children's behaviour. But I guess the challenge for leaders is to make sure that in and amongst all those other challenges, there is that financial resource to commit to attendance. And I think in my experience, having that real commitment, drive and dedication to address it is really important. But it perhaps doesn't always feel like the most pressing issue when you've got other things that you're trying to firefight against. I think it's probably important to draw a connection as well between the increase we've seen in SEND. So if I can tell you a bit about the journey in my school, if I cast my mind back to 2019, we had roughly 2.5% of the school population who had EHCPs. And as I mentioned just then in my introduction, we're now at 9% and rising. So some of that you could say is COVID related. Some of it just seems to be a real increase, particularly in early years and key stage one, in children that have these additional needs. And if we look at what we've known for a long time, there's a real correlation between SEND and high rates of absence, whether that's because some of those children have additional medical needs, whether it's to do with them feeling cognitive overload, not belonging in school, but we know there's a deep connection there. So there's two things going on here. If SEND is on the increase, surely as professionals and as a sector, we should be expecting to see some level of increase in absence from school as well. Not to mean that we would accept it, but I think it's probably a logical conclusion to draw that those two things would be linked in some sort of way.
Yeah, that's really helpful. I think this point around, it's not acceptance as much as understanding, isn't it? And then from that point of understanding people's needs and families, we can do something about it. And it struck me that the point you made about the percentages and how it looks, that's a message that's come through really strongly in the podcast. And now, you know, a couple of school leaders have stated it, and I've never thought about it before. And it's one of those things that small ways of challenging our thinking, small habit changes, small ways of communicating can make big differences. That's really struck me.
So Oliver, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about the structures and the staffing for supporting attendance in your school. So getting into a little bit more of the operational details and some of the decisions that you've made around that.
Sure. So I guess what I'd like to say at the outset is that I think schools should devise a plan, implement it with real rigour, and then monitor its impact really carefully following that. Addressing high rates of absence and persistent absence requires that good plan, but it has to be consistently implemented by all staff in the school. And that's really important. It can't be one person that's relied upon to be the sort of beacon for school attendance. Everybody should live and breathe it really to have the most impact. There are no quick fixes. So I would encourage anybody thinking about trying to improve attendance to really be in for the long term. It isn't something that can shift overnight. Going back to what I said at the outset of the conversation, it's important to recognise how significant a couple of percent is. So trying to move perhaps from 94% to 96%, that's years worth of work. It's thousands of bums on seats. So you have to have that plan. You have to think it's the right plan, believe in it and stick to it. Obviously monitoring and hoping that along the way there are some individual gains and you're seeing some promising green shoots, but it will take some time to see it really transmit through to a full percent or two in terms of whole school attendance. So something that I've reflected on over the years of leading attendance in my school is that often parents and colleagues have misconceptions about rates of attendance. And something we use, I think, really effectively in my school, we have a table which outlines going down in 5% intervals what absence from school looks like. So just looking up at the chart, for example, a pupil that's got 95% attendance has been absent for 5% of the year, would have missed roughly 2 weeks. And if I equate that to the timetable in my school, that's about 50 lessons. And if you keep taking that on 5% at a time, it doesn't take long before you get to a really significant impact and hundreds of lessons that have been missed. Don't forget, that's just in one academic year. And if these problems are really, really embedded and happen year on year on year, you could be talking about children missing a really considerable amount of their education. So it's really significant. And actually, I find many times parents are really surprised to hear that. And sometimes some colleagues less experienced in attendance are really surprised to hear the detail in that. So I think having an environment in school where everybody's crystal clear about why attendance is so important, debunking some of that educational language. So persistent absence is perhaps not the most useful phrase for a parent, but understanding that if a child has missed 10% of their school year, that's like 4 weeks or 100 lessons, that's going to resonate a bit more with me as a parent who doesn't live and breathe school systems and school language. So getting all of those things clear, I think, is really, really critical. I think you need to think about how you make expectations really clear beyond that. So thinking about holidays and appointments, we have what I think is a really effective poster in school. And it just really details how much of a full calendar year is time spent in school and how much is time not spent in school. And when I first saw this, because it's something I stole, it was an example of what a good one looks like that I saw at a conference. Children should spend 190 days every academic year in school, but that actually means that there's 175 days that they're not attending. And I think seeing that visually and seeing how much time families have got to make appointments, to go on holiday, to do other life admin, actually that really helps when you reason in with parents about why it's okay for us to expect that children are in school and that school is the best place for them to be.
My final question, I feel like I just want one more gem from you, Oliver. So what's the one strategy you'd advise school leaders to consider when approaching the challenge of improving school attendance?
So I want to be cheeky here, Alex. I want to see if I can bundle two things together.
You're not the first. You won't be the last. Go on. Keep it quick.
So I think I'd assign responsibility to a member of staff. And although you need that whole involvement and that collective from everybody, having somebody to figurehead it is really, really critical. And if you can be as fortunate as me and get somebody as brilliant as Julie, that will make your life a lot easier. But it's not just a case of appointing somebody. It genuinely is about protecting time to be directed and dedicated to attendance. And then I think coupled with that, it would be designing simple and universally understood systems and a strategy that really gets to the nub of the problem, so that all members of staff and the community can get behind it. You know, ultimately, attendance is everybody's business. It's complex. It's multifaceted. It's not an issue that you can fix overnight. As I said earlier, it's going to take a long time if you're starting from a low baseline. You have to stick with that plan. You've got to follow those rules consistently, and it'll only be over a really extended period of time you'll be able to check properly if it's working. So it's design that plan, keep faith in it, monitor it, and hopefully you're doing the right things and it'll have that impact.
That's brilliant. And that's a great point to end. It's effectively last interview, last point, but just so many things in there for helping school leaders and colleagues who support schools and even policymakers considering this challenge. And there's lots of people in communities who are trying to support. You mentioned earlier about some high need pupils. Sometimes there's this like careful consideration of complexity that's happening in our schools. But what I do know is there's lots of brilliance happening, and you just exemplified that. So thank you, Oliver, for your time.
Thanks for having me on.
As ever, Freya, that was a really interesting collection of interviews. I think before this podcast, I was kind of thinking about attendance as a set of big national data and this phrase, persistent attendance. And it worrying me, and you think about the reality of that on learning and families and schools who don't quite have enough time. But what reassured me is that, hearing from school leaders, hearing about that national picture, is there is no, big special kind of silver bullet here. It's about the accumulation of a lot of small things done really well. It's about that careful implementation. And we've just had that amazingly described by school leaders on the ground. So yes, there is a post-COVID challenge. Yes, there's probably realities here about some people from disadvantaged backgrounds and some communities finding it more of a challenge than some of their peers, perhaps. But we should diagnose that really carefully because colleagues know their communities, they know their families and pupils, and that really stood out for me. So lots of small things done well. What stood out for you?
Yeah, I think in a sort of similar theme actually, that small things done well, something that's really come out to me is the communication with families and how really well-designed communications that have been thought through from the perspective of the people receiving those communications, as well as the messages that we as schools might want to send. That has come out quite strongly for me. Just simple things like the easy misunderstanding that a 90% attendance figure sounds good. But actually, in our educational context, that's a real problem. And so reframing those communications with families, and actually the Working with Parents guidance report from the Education Endowment Foundation has a recommendation all about tailoring the communication with families to be positive, to be clear, to be seeing parents as sort of partners in the learning journey of the young people that we work with, and is well worth a look if you haven't read it already.
Yeah, good promotion. I like that. And also, I think that point about reframing is already the concreteness of 100 lessons rather than percentage points, and 100 smiles rather than just something like belonging, which it matters. There's emerging evidence that's really quite important, but it could maybe be a bit fuzzy, a bit amorphous for people. So I think that really stood out for me as well. Yeah, I wholly agree. Hopefully, for all of our listeners, the whole podcast has offered something really illuminating about what is a national challenge, in fact, an international challenge, but lots of ideas to go away with, some sources and resources to follow up on as well. Do go and dig out Owen Carter's Impact Ed report on attendance, understanding attendance, really powerful. And do go on the EEF website where we're developing resources focused in on attendance. And you hearing from those school leaders like Jane and Oliver, who are really breaking this down into manageable steps. And one manageable step to finish on, do subscribe, follow the Evidence Interaction podcast. We've got lots of new exciting content being planned. We've got new guidance report coming out around implementation very soon, and lots more to share. So follow along. Thank you for listening.